America's leading stamp dealer.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Immersed in our final hour with this fascinating tale of a UFO case. 1967, you're looking for them. These people in the Austin Healey are looking for them. The Austin Healey, by the way, that predates the Mini Cooper, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does, as far as I know.
So let's continue.
Okay. Now, by the way, let me mention, well, I'll describe the sighting first. Here comes the cigar-shaped object, which was coming kind of, I'd have to check my notes to be absolutely sure, but it was out of what I think was generally the south. And it's coming across, looked like it's following a horizontal path, probably paralleling the earth. And there are some clouds in the sky, some over to the north. But it comes across, and I decide, well, I'm going to signal the thing. So I had one of these spotlights that's about, the front of it's about, you know, 4 inches or so in diameter with one of those big, large batteries, not these round batteries, but these rectangular batteries in a big battery. And so I stepped out of my car and started flashing at this thing. Well, it stopped. It stopped moving and stopped. And I'd have to review the case. I wasn't expecting to mention this on this show. I've reviewed the case details to get it more precisely. But to tell you the truth, and I'll confess that it kind of scared me. And I temporarily jumped back in the car. It was just a gut reaction. I'm there alone with my dog. And he didn't say anything. Then I got back out, and I may have done it, gotten the nerve, and did it again. And he stopped again. Eventually, it went on. I stopped flashing it. And it started up, and it went on, and it disappeared behind a cloud bank that was, I would judge, about 25,000 feet, kind of moving in out of the northwest, I think. And that was in the sighting. Well, I reported this faithfully to the officer who was not a low-level officer. This was a pretty high-level officer that was interviewing me. And as I said, I do know his name to this day. I just don't have it in my memory. And I told him this. I gave him all the details, and it subsequently is. You can find it listed. It's listed as Austin, Texas, for the 24th of June, 1967. Actually, I'd gone out there kind of celebrating the anniversary of the Kenneth Arnold event. And so we got to talking, and he said, "Who do you think those guys were in the Austin Healey?" And I said, "Well, I don't know." I said, "I wish I knew, because you know you could get the impression that they were trying to do the same thing I was." He said, "Have you entertained the possibility that there are non-terrestrial aliens that look like us that may be carrying on operations right here on the surface of the earth, right among us, even driving an Austin Healey?"
And you're sure this guy was an intelligence
person? Oh, I know for sure.
Person,
I mean, he
transmitted
all the information, and I later heard from Hector Quintanilla. You know, they had passed the information on to Blue Book headquarters. It wouldn't have happened if this guy was not legitimate. And I said, "Well, wait a minute." I said, "Yeah, I mean, I suppose that they could be. If they're really advanced, they might take on any appearance they want. I don't know if they would naturally look like us, but they might be able to modify themselves and look like us." I said, I suppose it's possible. I said, "Do you have some reason to believe that that's happening?" And he said, "Yes, sir, I do." And
so he's basically confirming that this intelligence operative was on the up and up.
And I know he was.
And why would he confirm to you? I'm confused here.
Well,
why would this guy confirm this to you?
Wait. If you mean was he up and up, was he from Bergstrom Air Force Base, there's no question at all about that. Now, whether he was on the up and up about this story, you see, I said, "Did you learn this in the Air Force?" And he said, "Yes." But then I tried to question him further, and he kind of balked out and said, "Well, you know, I think I've told you probably more than I should now." So he shut up after that.
So he kind of hinted around that there are human-looking aliens walking among us. That's frightening.
Well, yeah, that was my impression. My impression is that he was totally sincere. Now, I might be naive. He might have been just, you know, leading me on, seeing if I would talk about Adamski and Space Brothers, something which I was past at that time. But, you know, but my impression was that he was quite genuine.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yes, and so they had that record. That was Bergstrom's first contact with me.
Now, this is an interesting question. If we checked through the Freedom of Information Act, would there be any chance we get any evidence of this, or is that something just maybe
too
obscure?
I mean, you don't have to check Freedom of Information. All you do is go to the National Archive and check Blue Book files. You'll see this case recording right there, and I have a copy of the letter. I've got it right here, but I don't think I've got it right here in the drawer beside me, including the name of the officer and everything else. But you know how it is when you look through a book to show somebody that something's in there, and when they're there in front of you, you can't find it. But I have also a copy of Hector Quintanilla eventually wrote me, and he started asking questions that had been answered to this guy. He said, you know, we have this case from whatever his name was, and he gave me the officer's name, so it was, he definitely had it from him. But he said, you want to ask you this, and I wrote him back and said, hey, look, Hector, this is ridiculous. That man took copious notes. And I said, he impressed me as being exceedingly thorough. I'm sure that he gave you the answers to all those questions. And I forget, I'd have to check my notes and Hector Quintanilla's letter. You know who Hector Quintanilla was, of course. And,
yeah, of course.
With Blue Book. And he gave me the impression that they wanted to try to just flatten this case out and make it easy to explain and explain it. And I don't remember my exact words. I wish I had it right in front of me. If I'd known I was going to talk about this, I would have it in front of me and give you the detail. But I got him told. I told Detective Denier, I said, you may fool a lot of people, including people that have seen things. You may convince them. I said, but what I saw, I am an experienced guy observer. I've been doing it for years, and I have described in great detail to the officer what I saw. There is no conventional explanation for the subject. And he must have taken me seriously. Well, you'll see it's listed. Check it for yourself in Blue Book Files. It's listed as one of the unidentifieds, and it was one of the last cases. Originally, when Brad Steiger's book on Blue Book came out, I think it said that listed as the last case, but subsequently, I think there are two or three maybe other cases that they received subsequent to the closing of Project Blue Book that are now included in the archive list.
Now, what's the official explanation from the Air Force about this case? What do they say?
It is unidentified. Check it for yourself.
I have a couple of questions here that spring to mind. The first one is about the event that you just described. Did you attempt to go over and compare notes with the occupants of the Austin Healey, to your recollection? I know this is 50 years ago.
No, I didn't. I mean, I was alone, and I don't know. I had no weapons. You know, all I had was a spotlight and a big dog, but maybe I should have taken the big dog and gone over there. But I did not. So count me as chicken in that respect. It never occurred to me that they might be alien. Now, I'm glad I thought that, because one thing he did say, he said, have you considered the possibility, you know, about the, but then he said, you see, these guys could have, if they were aliens, they could have used their headlights as a physical lock-on. But then once the lock-on of location was obtained, they might have been communicating by some invisible to your eye means. He did say that.
You know, something hits me from this, and I'm just going to throw it out as a really offhand, off-the-wall suggestion. With his intelligence agent, sure, he may have been the real thing. Do you think he was playing games with you, pulling your leg, just kind of seeing how you'd react to something a little bit out there?
Oh, yeah, I suggested that a while ago. I mean, that is a possibility. I've entertained that possibility many times. Sometimes, I mean, he seemed totally sincere, but on the other hand, there's some good liars. And it could be either way. I really don't know.
You know, also, they would possibly have information about you, obviously. And to be blunt, you know, you're a UFO guy. A lot of people think that UFO people, and they think that of me, we're just a bunch of wackos. And so maybe he figured, well, you know what? I'm going to see what I can do. I'm going to stretch the envelope, see precisely how this guy's going to react when I tell him all this stuff. See if he does wacky things.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he could well be. But the thing is, ultimately, he took me, obviously, what I said very seriously, because the case did end up as one of the, you know, out of the numbers that they supposedly studied. I don't know how much study they did, but it is truly listed as an unidentified case.
Well, I have another question, and it involves the event where the jets were scrambled, and later, a few minutes later, a prop plane. Now, you had mentioned that in '67 you had already established a somewhat of a rapport with the officials at Bergstrom. Do you recall calling Bergstrom that night and saying, "Hey, did you guys pick up something on radar?"
Oh, no. You mean the night the jets came over the site?
Correct.
50 feet up? Oh, no, we didn't communicate with them. Of course, you didn't have cell phones then.
We'll have to ask more about that communication or attempt or why you didn't in a moment. We've got Ray Stanford with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Are you ready to order the official Paracast t-shirt? You asked, we answered. We're now taking orders for the official Paracast t-shirt. It comes in white, 100% cotton. The front of it features the same logo that we have on our community forums. On the back it says, Separating Signal from Noise. To order the official Paracast t-shirt, here's all you have to do. Visit our new online store at store.theparacast.com. One more time, that's store.theparacast.com. You can use a major credit card to place your order for the official Paracast t-shirt. Hey neighbors, we have one more thing to talk about, and that's more merchandise at the official Paracast store. We have hats, we have jackets, we even have a flip video camcorder customized with the Paracast logo at the official Paracast store. It's all now available at the official Paracast store, store.theparacast.com.
Have you ever felt like the United States government knows way too much about your financial affairs? I continue to hear stories about property seizures, frozen bank accounts, confiscation of stocks and bonds. It makes me wonder if the U.S. citizen will ever again have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Unfortunately, with the Drug and Money Laundering Act, the IRS Revenue Ruling 6045 of 1984, and the Trading with the Enemy Act and Franklin D. Roosevelt's Executive Order of 1933, some precious metal holdings are subject to government intervention. For this reason, Midas Resources has prepared a report explaining the boundaries of trading precious metals privately. Whether if you have any intention of trading with Midas Resources or not, I have instructed my representatives to give this report out free. Call for your free copy at 1-800-686-2237. When investing, always proceed with caution. Again, call 1-800-686-2237. Exercise your legal right to trade metals privately. 1-800-686-2237.
Folks, have you lost your power and wanted to simply flip a switch to get the lights back on? If so, this is going to be the most important message you'll ever hear, because there's never been a better time to get ready for the winter power outages ahead. Here's why. Solar power generators are now available from our friends at Solutions from Science, one of our oldest sponsors. Their emergency backup systems provide life-saving electrical power when you need it most. Unlike gas generators, a solar generator runs quietly, emits no fumes, and produces electricity from the sun. It's like having an electric power plant running quietly in your own home. Whether it's ice storms, brownouts, or blackouts, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. When the power goes out this winter, you'll be ready with a solar power generator from Solutions from Science. Go to MySolarBackup.com for more information. That's MySolarBackup.com or call 877-327-0365.
That's what it sounds like when a burglar kicks in the door of a dark house that looks like no one is home. Don't let your home be the next target. Make it look like someone is home watching television with Fake TV. Fake TV is a small electronic device that makes the same light as a real television. So from outside, it looks like someone is home watching TV. Fake TV plugs in just like a lamp on a timer, but is far more convincing to burglars. Fake TV deters burglars, costs far less than an alarm, and is highly recommended by numerous police departments. Use it anytime you're away from home. To order your Fake TV for only $34.95, go to FakeTV.com. Or call 1-877-5-FAKE-TV. Each additional Fake TV is only $29.95. So get one for you and one for a loved one for safety, security, and peace of mind for both of you. Call 877-5-FAKE-TV or go to FakeTV.com. FakeTV.com, the burglar deterrent.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And if you'd like to catch up on past episodes, we have hundreds of shows for you to download direct from theparacast.com. That's theparacast.com. Or check us out at iTunes.
With Gene and Chris, with Ray Stanford, as we wind down the minutes and hours here and continue with this discussion. So you didn't think, Ray Stanford, about checking up further on what they knew about this.
You mean about what the officer told me when he came to my little apartment there in Austin?
No. Calling Bergstrom after the planes flew over.
Sure.
Okay. Oh, I did not think that I would get any information. Little did I know that they would, you know, it was a matter of just a few months at most, I guess, actually call me and bring up the subject and tell me why they did it. You know, I knew they had to have been there because of that. I mean, we presumed that they had tracked it or they wouldn't have been out there because they'd never come before. We'd had a National Guard helicopter come over and wave flashlight at us as they saw our light circle, but that wasn't official. You were just guys on the weekend with the National Guard having fun with what they'd read about in the papers or seen on TV. But these guys would have thought they would have told me anything. But then, as I said, they call up and, I mean, this fellow called from intelligence and explained exactly why they were there. They wondered, they hadn't found out if it was on the ground in contact with us.
And offered to kind of channel reports to you. I mean, that's pretty unprecedented.
Yeah, well, that was the day before. That's not unusual. They had done that since they were, you know, no longer interested. But the offer that they made to me, I said, what's there in it from me? I said, look, I call you. We have a UFO out at the at our lab site. I call you and you scramble F4s. I said, that thing could get the hell out of here. You know, I mean, we may lose data because we called you. And it's not you that we want to track them. And I said, so what's there in F4s? He said, now we have these scanning pictures. He said, we have excellent of your whole site. He said, you know, you have that state-of-the-art television and out there with color, and we're going to superimpose. We did have a map superimposed, but we can give you detail maps to superimpose and that new color TV. So that was, even the TV people came up there and saw that set and the resolution, what we could do with it. We were shocked. It was expensive too. But here was him offering these aerial scans, which we didn't have the good satellites that we can get now off of Google Earth, anything that we have now, and offering these for us to put on the screen and so we could tell over what the object was maneuvering, because we had three cameras. Even if we weren't picking it up on our radar, we had three camera stations. They were hundreds of feet apart with underground lines, hopefully to prevent the field effect of the UFOs from knocking out the communication between the camera stations and the simultaneous electronic actuation of the shutter. We had optical infinity aimers on the cameras, and they were used so that we would be very accurately aimed right at it, and all three cameras would be aimed at it in the same way, and their shaft encoders would put data into the computer, translated into an above-ground location, which would then be superimposed on the above-ground photographs that he proposed they give to us. But I said, well, that's not quite enough. I said, I can talk it over with the powers that be, but frankly, it sounds like it's not that it's a lopsided deal, because you can then chase those things, your F4s with your scanners, and we're sit there with you've chased them off, and we've got very little except what we got before we called you. And he said he understood, but that's where I left it. We never did call him back to invite them out to our lab. So I should have. It might have been fun, but I thought discretion was a better part of valor at that point in life.
Well, definitely a fascinating just snippet from your incredible treasure trove of stories and experiences and efforts in hard documentation of this mystery we're all interested in. Speaking of the mystery, I did mention to our listeners, Ray, before you came on, that we were going to talk about the years of analytical work have left you in a position to advise people on the do's and don'ts and what to look for when examining any of these just thousands of UFO photos and films and videos that have been coming out on the Internet. And you and I have talked about this at length on numerous occasions, and I've learned a lot from you on what to actually look for that will give us a sense of the reality of this phenomenon in a particular shot or picture. Why don't we just cover some of that ground right now? Okay. Why don't you give us a thumbnail sketch of the state of visual evidence right now in the field, and then we'll go to the nuts and bolts of how to properly analyze these things.
Okay. Let me mention that. I mean, for example, a couple of days ago, I heard that somebody had photographed a bunch. There was an account of somebody describing all kinds of incredible things and had taken video of a whole flight of objects of trees off in the distance. You see them as times pass around behind the top of the trees. And here's these objects. Well, I saw the video and I laughed. The person who took the video had let their imagination get far away from them in seeing what they were watching, what we were taping. It was video. They're disking, I should say. I'm old-fashioned when I say taping. But what they were disking was actually just these so-called Chinese lanterns or homemade versions. I don't know which. Now, in benefit of the listener, I want to tell the listener that when you see something like that, I can tell you from experience, the color of a candle flame that you see, and sometimes the slightly modified color, depending on the color of the paper that's used in that lantern, that color, that kind of candle-like color, kind of an orange-yellow, is not created, is not generated by UFO field effects. It's not a UFO. One of the ways that you can tell if you're colorblind or don't really realize exactly what the color might be that's confusing is, and I believe that I can say that in all, if not, then I will say most all cases of the, what I call a bona fide anomalous aerial object, there will be a high speed, not a candle flicker, but a high speed, approximately 10 to 12 hertz vibration of the light source. And it is unmistakable. Now, some people have such low flicker fusion in their brain perceptual system that they visual and perceptual system in the brain that they might fuse this, but most people will be able to see this kind of flicker. At 10 to 12,
is that noise? Excuse me. I think our listeners may have driven off the road if they're in their cars when they heard that noise. What did you do there? Because right now I'm listening and suddenly, you know, I'm enjoying the discussion and following through with what you're saying. And you're a great storyteller. You tell great.
He's a great sound effects guy, too, let me tell you.
I'll tell you, if there was still a need for radio sound effects and there was still a business in doing radio dramas, we'd call you up real quickly.
Yeah, I'd come out of retirement. Yep. But hey, listen, this is a thing to watch for. When you see that kind of the frequency that the aircraft lights vibrate too, but they don't vibrate at that rate. They're higher, and you're going to flicker fuse it, and you're never going to see it. But most UFOs vibrate at that rate, and interestingly, the extreme low frequency component of their magnetic field, which we've have recorded on numbers of occasions, also has vibration right in that range. And one of these candle power things will not have that. And I also will say that none of these remotely controlled aircraft with the LEDs, they don't flash at that rate. And you'll see a lot of the fake pictures these days that you see on YouTube. They have used LED lighting with a kind of bluish color. UFOs emit in the bluish, but it does not have that particular cast that the LED has when you record it on video. And it's a different color. There are discrete wavelengths of light that UFOs tend to emit in. Now, when they emit pure white, it will appear to be the whitest white that you have ever seen in most cases. There is an orange, but it's certainly not like the lanterns.
Color spectrum and so much more with Ray Stanford. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also, print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
Iodine protection packs from hempusa.org are now in stock for immediate delivery worldwide. Our iodine protection packs include microplant powder, green life kelp, red palm oil, and our clear roll-on iodine that will feed the body the iodine it needs. All iodine protection packs are in stock. Save you money and ship for free in all 50 states. Visit hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
HempUSA.org has a revolutionary wonder food for detoxing the body and rebuilding the immune system.
Microplant powder can help unclog arteries and soften heart valves while removing heavy metals, virus, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Plus, it cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. Visit us at HempUSA.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Fight back this cold and flu season with the world's best garlic extract, Ali-C. Why Ali-C? Because it helps your body fight viruses, bacteria, and fungi. Ali-C has been scientifically proven in double-blind studies using low doses to greatly reduce the number, severity, and duration of common colds. Ali-C contains 300 milligrams of stabilized allicin, the active ingredient in crushed garlic. Studies show Ali-C is effective against MRSA, bacterial, fungal, and viral infections. One tablet of Ali-C has the equivalent of 40 cloves of garlic. Ali-C supports your body's resistance to all types of conditions and can help lower high blood pressure and high cholesterol. So boost your body's resistance to infection with nature's best garlic extract, Ali-C. For more information and to order Ali-C, call 877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com. That's 1-877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com for your Ali-C today.
Hi, this is Ted Phillips, listening to the Paracast, and it's as good as it gets, believe me.
With Gene and Chris, we have Ray Stanford for two more segments, and we're looking at the color spectrum. Is this the UFO color spectrum? Do they have specific colors you can depend on? Seriously.
Yes, they do. Let me break in here and say the people that want to photograph and film these things, video these things, look, do yourself a favor and watch in the daytime. They know they can be seen by the light sources at night and are less frequently around by far at night than they are at daytime. And a daytime film will give you far more evidence than a nighttime film. So please watch for them and carry whatever you've got that you can carry to record the optical images. Watch in daytime. Focus your eyes on the most distant object in the sky so that your perception of your brain is out there. And unless you're driving, you have to keep track of the traffic. And that will enable you to tend to perceptually lock on to things moving up there. Otherwise, even though they're moving up there, you'll miss it just as you miss the – you may hear a jet plane fly over low but and try to spot it, but sometimes you can't even spot it, although you know it's in exceptionally close range. But you need to keep that focus out there, which is not only a visual focus but a perceptual focus. Now, regarding the colors of these things, the colors that UFOs emit in tend to be exceedingly pure. People use that adjective again. The purest red, the purest blue, the purest orange. The orange tends to be, there can be a amber, but it's different than a sodium vapor amber. But the orange tends to be a deep, almost a cadmium orange red. Some people might call it vermilion. But on the occasion when we got light spectra on some of the red objects, they were so red that they made the helium neon laser that we had the light from it looked orange, it would explain why people use that adjective extremely pure, because the light from these two objects that were definitely anomalous serial objects, it was extremely pure in the long red, near infrared wavelength, and in fact, it was not only extremely pure at that, it was one single wavelength, that's why it looks pure. But that single wavelength had been broken up into components on our light spectra. And that can occur under one, either of two conditions. If the light is emitted in the presence of an extremely strong electromagnetic field or an extremely strong electrical field. Of course, according to the magnetodynamic theory, which I support for gross atmospheric propulsion of these objects, you would have both conditions. So either one or both could be contributing to the fact that in, for example, the pictures that we got on the night of the 19th of July, 1978, were actually broken down into, I think it was six, it might have been just four components, but possibly six, that are not to be mistaken for discrete wavelengths of light. They were actually the same wavelength, but split by one of the two, or both of the two phenomena that I mentioned. I won't try to get people into the technology of it or the technical names, but it is a very pure, exceptional light. And most of these things that people see, I agree with organizations that say they're not UFOs. And I wish people would wise up to these lanterns, because they're increasing in number, and every time it seems like somebody has a party these days, they have to launch 10 or 20 of them.
We're also seeing a lot of birds and just prosaic objects, too, that don't appear in the frame when the person takes a picture. I think you've told me in the past that this is usually an indication that they're dealing with a mundane object.
That's right. Yeah. The thing is that you perceptually ignore a bird flying by or insects flying by. You're focusing on your subject of your camera, and people are like, ooh, this thing is in the picture. It must be a UFO. Well, in most cases, it's not. I'm not saying that a UFO that's not seen by the eye cannot appear in a picture. I know better. But in most of these cases that we see where they did not see it or notice it, it was, in fact, a bird or insects. I see this all the time on YouTube and elsewhere, and it's amazing. I do not understand why these so-called UFO researchers aren't calling a spade in that case. And in many cases, they're not. They're just going, wow.
Well, they got to keep new material before the public, you know. So I think a good example would be a lot of the pictures you see on Filer's Files, for instance. I mean, I'm able, just to, with the limited amount of knowledge I have in the analytical realm here, to discount a vast majority of these pictures that show up there. Although this week's version of the Filer's Files does have a couple of shots that do have that pure light that you described. What are some of the other things that people should look for?
Well, okay, in daylight, when you see what I call a bona fide anomalous aerial object, it is not, in other words, I'm researching those. I'm not researching UFOs because somebody, you know, saw something in the sky they couldn't identify. We've narrowed it down with our instruments and our experience in observing that we know and are interested only in the phenomena that are truly non-prosaic and truly anomalous by normal terms. Now, one of the phenomena that you will notice, and it's been described in the literature in both CUPOS and elsewhere in their publications some years ago, there was, for example, the guy that when he reported this to the Center for UFO Studies, was an aircraft engineer with a major corporation. And in his youth, he had been with a Boy Scout, a large Boy Scout thing on the Catalina Island off the coast of California. And they saw a domed disc, as they described it, and it got close enough that it covered a good angular size in the sky, and it even went across, and its shadow fell on the mountains off to one side. So they knew approximately its size by the size of the shadow, because they knew the dimensions of the features on the mountain. But he said what intrigued him most and is stuck in his memory as being puzzling was that against this beautiful blue sky, when you looked at the sky right around the object, it was bluer than the rest of the sky. Indeed, that is the case in daylight UFO observations if you look very carefully. And it's not visually, it's far out enough that it's not like some bright object causing you an optical after effect as your retina shifts slightly and you're seeing an odd pattern around it because of the effect on the retina. It's actually an objective thing. It is there. But if you will film it at the highest speed that your camera will tolerate for the lighting conditions, and if it's a very bright object, you want to, if possible, to beat in on the light for the amount of exposure you give, not on the sky. We want the object, after all. And you will find, when you get the pictures back, that it will shock you, because there will be, in genuine photographs of genuine anomalous aerial objects, you're going to see the object in ghost images in tones of a strange color, a kind of blue, around the object, all kinds of images, some of them negative images, some of them positive images, and in every conceivable rotation of the object, around the object that you are watching that I refer to as the target object. Now, the scientific ramifications of this are potentially absolutely paradigm and earth-shaking because it does not appear to be stealth. After all, it doesn't keep us from seeing the object, and it appears to be something that is related to the nature of the object or what is going on in or around the object itself. And we're working heavily on this, but we laugh because the people keep coming up with these, and even the fakers, if they learn about this eventually, they're not going to be able to easily fake this effect. It is extraordinary, and when anybody comes and visits me and sees this production that shows many, a vast number of examples of this, you'll understand that it is something that no one ever grasped because they were not studying the photograph. Now, these multiple objects or images are not just in the photographs I take. I have pictures taken by other people way back in the 50s. For example, there are multiple objects in a nice series of photographs taken by Francois Meilerman, the postman in Belgium on May 5th, I believe, 1950, possibly 5. And there are numbers of examples of this. There are other phenomena that are unique to these objects. For example, when an object is about to maneuver, and it may continue sliding into the maneuver, unseen to your eye but seen on the film because it is so fast, there will be columns of light shot off certain edges but not all edges of the object to electrify the air in those specific areas to provide lift under the influence of the magnetic field producing magnetodynamic flow. And we first recorded this in a photograph we got of the object on Padre Island, Texas, on Saturday, November 6, 1954. The 9 witness street police officer witnesses the case, but we didn't know what it was. But in years later, of course, where we have movie films with hundreds and hundreds and thousands of frames, we can follow this, and we now believe we know what it is.
I'll tell you what, we'll ask you what it is in a moment with Ray Stanford. Joining Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Is there a secret UFO agenda? Do strange creatures from the darkest corners of the mind roam the earth? Is there evidence for mind control, time travel, or devious government conspiracies? Find out the inside scoop on the latest conspiracies, paranormal activity, and Fortean phenomena when you subscribe to Tim Beckley's Conspiracy Journal. It's jam-packed with stories, special book and DVD promotions, and the best news, it's absolutely free, sent right to your mailbox. Plus, a bonus free email newsletter sent out every Friday. Simply send an email with your name and address to MrUFO@webtv.net. That's MrUFO@webtv.net. Find out what they don't want you to know.
Big Berkey water filters are in high demand. Storable foods are also in high demand. BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com has always kept our focus on the Berkey water filter products. But increasingly, our customers have been asking for storable foods. After months of research, BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com now offers great-tasting, long-lasting, storable foods. These ready-to-eat meals are packed in airtight nitrogen pouches. All you do is just add water. And because they're sealed so well, they come with a 25-year shelf life. Combine our Berkey water filters, which are powerful enough to purify treated, untreated, or even stagnant pond water with our storable foods, and you have a winning combination. Remember, we offer free shipping on every order over $50, and GCN listeners receive 5% off all ceramic filter systems. Visit BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com or call 877-99-BERKEY. That's BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com or call 877-99-BERKEY today.
Did you ever think you'd be where you are, a decade into the 21st century? Record foreclosure rates for homes, if not yours, your neighbors. Thankful for the unemployment check since you were laid off. And placing your child's name on the angel tree in hopes of a Christmas gift, along with thousands of other Americans. Did you ever think your future would feel this out of control? The fact is, in all this craziness, there's only one thing you can control. Your greatest dependency, your food supply. Make 2012 the year you take control by getting prepared. eFoods Direct introduces the best way to build your food supply in the 21st century. Get a 21-day supply of food free with purchase. Call 800-409-5633 or go to eFoodsDirect.com/Alex. Take back control in 2012. Call 800-409-5633 or go to eFoodsDirect.com/Alex. Remember, you can bet your life on eFoods Direct.
Heart and Body Extract continues to receive positive testimonials from people who have experienced amazing results, like Reed.
I just wanted to send you a quick but a very big thank you for Heart and Body Extract. I've been on the formula for nearly a month now, and the improvement in the circulation of my leg has been simply amazing.
Reed was facing a tough choice.
I was facing surgery due to the severity of 100% blocked arteries in both my legs. And my decision, waiting for surgery, to say no and try Heart and Body Extract instead has been thankfully the right decision.
And the result?
I can now walk up steps without noticeable pain.
Order Heart and Body Extract at 866-295-5305, 866-295-5305. Or hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract for a long and healthy life.
This is Jacques Vallée, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
With Gene, with Chris, with Ray Stanford. On the PowerCast final segment, so we have to make the answers real short now. We want to cover a little bit more ground. Okay, the answer, but you're holding out on us. What was the answer?
Oh, what the beams are. We use the term torque beams, but they are not – I'm not talking about a rocket exhaust kind of torque, a reaction propulsion kind of torque. What these do, they're not thrusters, in other words. What they're doing, they're simply electrifying a column of air out from the source. And then they will sweep this for whatever area they want to electrify. And what this does, it gives that area electrification, or in intense phase, turns it into plasma. And it interacts with the magnetic field and thus produces more lift in that area than in the area where it's not applied, and that side will lift up. They torque themselves. In other words, the effect of the beam results in torquing. The beam itself does not really torque. But that is apparently what is happening. And we have just thousands of images of this kind of thing happening, to some cases really extreme, beautifully sharp degrees, sometimes much less. They also have very, very intense magnetic fields. And although this has been a rare recording field, we have some excellent daylight examples wherein the electrification of the field around it became so strong that you're actually filming the visible magnetic field, analogous to when in school you scattered iron shavings on a piece of paper under which there was a bar magnet and you saw a dipolar magnetic field. We have films that show that. But if one looks carefully, one will have the kind of look that I did when I was shooting an object. I was right in front of the Public Affairs and Administration Building at Goddard Space Flight Center, November 19, 1989. During the last two photographs I got of the object at 20-power telephoto, 1,000-millimeter, 35-millimeter film, I could see that it looked like the field was being visible around it. And in the last one, it's just beautifully visible as a three-dimensional dipolar kind of feel, apparently due to the presence of plasma spiraling along the magnetic lines of force, as plasma is inclined to do when it interacts with the magnetic.
Ray, you mentioned your presentation that you've been, laboring on practically since I've known you, which is going on 8 years. When is this presentation going to be made available to the public? What are your plans on presenting all this really amazing analytical work that you've been doing for decades now? So many people out there, they're just so taken by you, and they're just dying to get a chance to see this wonderful evidence that you've collected and put into this amazing PowerPoint presentation that takes about 2 days, really, to get through. How would a person go about seeing this presentation?
Well, if a person can show me that they have good credentials in this field, that they're a credible person, not some kind of a half-cocked fluke out there that is into UFOs, but really isn't, except in an insane kind of way. If they can show me that they're a responsible, intelligent person that would like to analyze this and have contributed constructively to the field of unidentified object studies, I will be happy to, in fact, have them come here to my own home and show this to them on a good large computer screen. Now, I am getting more open with this. We have done this gradually in the same way that it took a lot of time for me to publish my new genus and species of Notosaur. You go about these slowly. You look at all factors. You try to understand what you're seeing because you want to describe it. And when you describe it, you want to describe it not with misleading terms but with correct terms. And it took us, about 4 years to complete and get the paper on the dinosaur published in Paleontology Journal. And in this case, we're working with something that new data has been coming in as I've gotten more and more films or photographs. And as my consultation with physicists has continued, I begin to see and understand more about it. What I'm trying to do is get it at a level to where it is really can be well explained, well described, and realistically interpreted, and hopefully get it published in one or more peer-reviewed journals. There have been papers on unidentified flying objects that appeared in two fairly major, and one of them quite major, scientific journals. And
which one of those? We've got to really move this along.
Okay, well, I don't recall the names. You have to ask. Let me see. Bruce McAbee was one of the names that was on one, the most recent one I'm aware of. But simply
optical
get
physics.
It in a major journal, and then we will come out with it at probably both as printed form. I still believe in old printed books and in DVD form where you can see and hear and see the actual video movies themselves in video form on your screen out of the disc.
Now, you understand why there's skepticism, Ray, and it's no one self-intended, but you have people who say, I have information, I'm going to present it, going to publish it, it's going to be released soon, and never seems to happen. So can you put a date?
No, I cannot put a date. It's okay. Like we couldn't put a date on even the publication of the dinosaur paper until literally 2 days before. You just can't do that in science. Scientific wheels turn slowly, and people need to understand that. I will stress this. I am not in the entertainment business. And if somebody has serious scientific interest, they're willing to call me. If they're willing to spend the money to fly across country or drive across country, or if they're nearby, contact me and see this, fine. But I'm not in the entertainment business, and I will only publish it when I think and in the opinion of the people that I'm working with, they feel that we have it in a form, and then we submit it to editors and get it accepted, no matter whether it's later the popular book. I would hope, quite frankly, that all this occurs before I'm still on this planet physically, and I'm trying to move things ahead fast. That is my major motivation in trying to move things ahead.
Well, Ray, you're in the Washington, D.C. area. And we do have quite a varied listenership here. We have some scientists. We have some people, I think, eminently qualified to see if they can wrangle an invitation. I do put out here publicly an invitation to anyone that would like to possibly take Ray up on this offer to contact us here at the Paracast. And we'll go ahead and forward on your request to Ray. Ray, I'm really excited that you're moving forward with this presentation. You were visited recently by quite a famous physicist who was quite taken with your work, and I think that's a bit of a vindication, I think, for you that you were able to help him in some of his thinking, and vice versa. Also, there's a Washington D.C. area of major. A publication reporter who you've been spending quite a bit of time with, who is just quite impressed with your work.
We can't talk about that right now. Yeah,
I know that, but it seems like you're really getting yourself gearing up for release of this data. And I, for one, you know, as I've often told you, I'm your biggest fan and do support you in your efforts. It's been really nice getting you on the show. Obviously, we're going to have you back on. We could turn this into the Ray Stanford Show very easily with your amazing 60 years that you've been involved in this field practically. So any other things that you want to say before we go ahead and sign off here?
How much time do you have?
1.5 minutes.
Okay. Yep. I would like to get into some of the when we look at UFO cases, I strongly recommend this book, Grassroots UFOs, for everybody. If you don't have it, go to Amazon.com and get it. These are not highly investigated cases in most instances, but they are described, they're things people described to a fellow from the Center for UFO Studies, and they are extremely interesting. When you find cases, when it's a bona fide thing, there will be phenomena that are totally surprising that we did not anticipate. And if I had time, I would go into some of the ones that we have experienced. But it would appear that they have, for example, a beam that's well known in the literature that slowly projects out. Well, I got a good film of this on October 5th, 1985. And it appears that this beam can have different types of functions. In one case, it is used, and we have film of doing this, in which actually smaller objects come down this beam and leave and go off into the distance. They come back and go in the beam. One might speculate that that beam is to get them out of the primary field of the parent or mother object, so that they are not affected adversely by that field when it's too strong. That makes a lot of sense.
I'll tell you what makes a lot of sense. If our listeners want to learn more of what you do, is there a way they can get a hold of you?
I don't have a website, and I don't have a publication of any kind. They can communicate with me. They could forward a letter through Chris, I guess, and I don't want to give out my email address, but
if
it's something I think is important, I'll get back to them.
Okay, so it's write to us, news@theparacast.com, news@theparacast.com. If you have some questions or comments to make about Ray Stanford, or go to our forums, forum.theparacast.com. A fast reminder before we go, Chris's site is OurStrangePlanet.com. That's Our Strange Planet, because it is a strange planet. To Ray Stanford, thanks for joining us this week on The Paracast.
My pleasure.
The Paracast, featuring Gene Steinberg and Christopher O'Brien, is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in The Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.